think leadership is about service, not about telling people what to do.
Welcome to the User Defenders Podcast, where we interview successful UX designers who fight for the user in order to inspire and equip you to do the same. And now, here's your host, Jason Ogle.
Greetings, User Defenders. Welcome to episode 13. Just interviewed Dan Moll, the great Dan Moll. What a wonderful conversation we had. Talked to him talking about being a dad and the superhero parallel with that. Invisible design, which you'll learn more about, and his design process. Continuous delivery. I love that term. I think we should change Lean UX to that. Anyway, also leadership. Was a great talk. Don't want to delay any further, so let's jump right in. Dan Moll is the founder and design director of the magnificent design collaborative Super Friendly, based in Philadelphia, where he teams up with his own Justice League of top-notch design superheroes such as Josh Clark, a.k.a. Dr. Touch, and Brad Frost. He's been the design director at Big Spaceship, interactive director at Happy Cog, technical editor for A List Apart, and the singer and keyboard player for the contemporary Christian band 424. He has a passion for playing matchmaker between surprising art direction and intuitive interaction design, and his most significant role, I'd wager, is as an enthralled husband and dad. Welcome, Dan. I'm super excited to have you on the show today.
Thanks, Jason. Happy to be here.
All right. So every superhero has a secret identity and origin story. Let's talk about yours.
Okay.
I'd like to start the show by you taking a few moments just to give us a look into your personal life.
Sure. Where should we start?
Anywhere you want, my friend. The way that I kind of express this is, what do you like to do when you're not working?
Yeah, gotcha. Well, I'm very happy and excited to be a dad. I got two young kids. So my wife and I just try to spend as much time with them as possible. I have two daughters, 4 and 2 years old. So just trying to watch them grow and all the cool things that they do. This morning, my younger daughter learned the word fart. And so she was telling everybody that daddy farted. So that's been keeping me busy and entertained.
Oh, dad life. Love it, man.
Hashtag deadlift.
There you go. I love those ages too. Those are just great.
Yeah, they're a ton of fun.
So cute. Tell us your origin story, Dan. What inspired you to pursue UX design as a career?
Well, ever since I was a kid, I was always interested in drawing and art and cartoons. I used to watch a lot of cartoons growing up. So I've always wanted to be an animator. For as long as I can remember, I'd always wanted to be some sort of artist. And I think what sealed the deal was when Toy Story came out, which I think was 94 or 95. And as soon as that came out, I was like, yep, this is what I want to do for the rest of my life. So I pursued a path, you know, in middle school and high school and college, just trying to be an animator. I went to school for animation. I went to college for animation, and I realized that I wasn't very good at that once I got to college. But coincidentally, I just sort of stumbled across these classes in school called things like typography and visual communications. And I realized that was actually the kind of stuff that I wanted to do. I just didn't know that you could have a career doing that stuff. So I discovered graphic design in college, and just the rest is history, I guess.
Mm. I love that about the animation too, because that's especially relevant today and on the web, because we're seeing so much more of what we see on the screen really come to life with interactions and micro interactions. So I bet that's really lended itself to your career.
Yeah, I mean, I always loved, or I always wanted to be able to do the 3D animation stuff, and I was never really good at that. But at the time where I was kind of moving over from that to graphic design, I discovered Flash, and Flash was kind of a nice medium between, you know, I couldn't do the 3D stuff, but kind of animating in 3D or in 2D was actually a really nice kind of bridge for that. And so, I have Photoshop open every day, but I have Flash open sort of every other day. So I'm always finding, like, on projects I'm doing motion prototypes and motion comps and Flash and After Effects. So that skill has certainly come in handy, especially lately.
Wow. So you're still using Flash in your work?
Yeah, all the time. Kind of the fastest way for me to express kind of ideas in motion. So it's a nice prototyping tool for me.
That's awesome, man. Dan, if you weren't doing this for a living, what would be your second career choice and why?
I think I would try to be a musician. I love music as much as I love design. I picked design, honestly, because I thought I'd have an easier time with that than being a musician. But I love music. I love playing music. You know, I played in bands for a while. And so I'd probably try to have a go at it as a musician. I don't know how that life would be, but I think I'd be interested enough to at least pursue it for a while.
Yeah, it's amazing. A number of my guests, I think it's very common in our field. A lot of us, we just love music. So it's really an interesting kind of parallel.
Yeah, I wonder what the overlap is. I mean, because so many designers that I know are musicians.
Right.
I don't know. I wonder if it kind of exercises the same muscle in your brain or something like that.
There has to be some sort of connection to those things.
Yeah, totally.
So, Dan, who's been the biggest superhero in your work and why?
Oh, boy. I don't know if I could narrow it down to one. I mean, I've had so many really great people that are mentors and teachers and just people that have given me advice and pointed me in the right direction. I'm not sure that I could narrow it down to one.
Yeah, understandable. So if you did have to, who would be?
Oh, boy.
And I know nobody else would feel left out. I mean, you work with some pretty phenomenal people, Dan.
Oh yeah, I mean, I've been really lucky to work with some really really excellent creative directors and designers and developers and all sorts of stuff, all sorts of different skill sets. But I think I would have to say my dad was probably the biggest influence in my work. Just because my dad has always been like a really good mentor for me. You know, we don't always see eye to eye. I mean, who does with their dad? But
sure.
But what I learned from him was sort of how to hold balance as high regarded in life. And so he's always sort of teaching me that when you're overdoing something, it means you're underdoing something else. So I try to kind of keep that principle around when I'm working. You know, if I'm working too much, I'm probably not spending enough time with my family, and vice versa. If I'm spending too much time with my family, I might not be spending enough time working. And so I think I think about sort of his lessons about balance and the stuff that he teaches me about, like how to just make sure you're living kind of a good equilibrium in your life of work and fun. And even within work, you know, doing enough design and doing enough dev and doing, you know, all that kind of stuff. I feel like the lessons still apply.
Yeah. So much onus back on us as dads, huh? As we kind of, you know, look at how we were brought up, and you know, there's, of course, there's good, there's bad, and you know, but we're human, and that's the thing. And as we get older and become dads, we realize that, right? And then all the things that we used to be angry at our dads for, like we're like, man, you know, you had a hard job. So yeah, I totally appreciate that, man. And that's a great answer.
Cool.
Dan, what's one habit that you believe contributes to your success?
I think I practice what I do a lot. I grew up as a musician. I kind of grew up playing piano without taking formal lessons until, you know, a couple years in, and then I was taking formal lessons. And I also played a lot of sports growing up. And I think in all of those aspects of my life, practice was a big deal, you know, and sort of getting the discipline of just putting things into practice and exercising whatever muscle I was trying to develop, whether that was a one in my brain or, you know, a physical one for sports or anything like that. So I think, you know, when I talk to younger designers who want to, like, you know, how do I make it as a designer, my only advice to them is really just, you got to do a lot of design. You know, you have to do as much of it as you can. You have to be sort of a prolific designer, and just being able to design in multiple styles and being able to, you know, do different types of design. I think that's one thing that I try to keep up as often as possible, is that, you know, I feel like these things and creativity in general is a muscle that if it doesn't get exercised, it atrophies. So the more you exercise it, the more you work it out, the stronger it gets.
I love that. Begin anywhere. That's one lesson that I've learned and I'm still learning. Just start anywhere and build stuff, right? That's the only way we can learn and truly grow.
Yep, totally. Because I don't think it works to say, well, I'm going to do it perfectly. I think doing it is the success, you know, not the perfectly part.
Love that. Can you tell us about one thing you're working on that you're most excited about?
Yeah, sure. So one of the bigger projects that I'm working on lately is a redesign of Philly.com. It's the largest news site in the region. It serves all the Philadelphia and greater Philadelphia areas. And on that project, one of the things that I'm really proud of is that the team is getting along super well. You know, we're really gelling. And with the client, I mean, really we're helping them kind of develop a culture of this continuous delivery method. So it's not a big redesign that we work on for months and months and months, and then one day just sort of, you know, reveal what's behind the curtain and pull the rug out under everybody who's used to the old site. So we're just sort of like iteratively rolling this thing out. A couple of weeks ago, we launched a new article page. So it's just a new article experience. If you went to the homepage or a section page, it would be the exact same as you were used to. But the article page is improved. So we get to kind of watch that for a couple of weeks and see how people are using it and what they're responding to and, you know, what we're observing is as good and bad. And then just 2 days ago, we actually launched the full responsive site, but only on mobile. So like the whole mobile experience is completely new. Whereas if you visited on the desktop, you'd have to go to the beta experience to kind of get that new responsive site. What I love about that project is that it's just transformative to see that organization go from this, like, you know, redesign every couple of years kind of organization to one where they're making that continuous delivery part of their culture and part of something that they're looking to do more and more of.
Mm. I love that continuous delivery. I haven't really heard that terminology yet. I think of like the lean UX movement where it's just an iterative approach.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
You're not shipping the whole completed project up front. You're actually delivering cycles. You're showing the client as they go. So you have them as almost like a partner in this process, right?
Yeah, totally. And I don't know if continuous delivery is like the official term for it. I mean, they started referring to it as that.
I like that.
And it just kind of caught on, so I love it too.
I think it should be the term. Let's start a movement.
I'm ready. I'll register the domain right now.
Do it. You know, it's funny. I was thinking about too, like we've come a long way, you know, since, you know, 2000, for example, you know, and even before where it's, you know, we would design something, we would get a brief and we would design, would get that and then create what they think, what the design department thinks it would look like. And then that would get handed off to development. And then a year later, sometimes
right.
He'd be like, okay, we're ready, ta-da, you know, show the client. And they'd be like, what in the bleep is this? What in the blazes are you showing me? And it's completely different than the vision that everybody had by that time.
Yep.
So we've come a long way. I appreciate that. Continuous delivery.
Totally.
Right on. Let's get into your transformation, Dan. Every superhero comes to a place where they realize the powers they have and they harness them for their greater good. Dan, what's your design superpower?
I love this question. So the name of my agency is called Super Friendly.
Yes.
It is, you know, certainly the surface meaning is about just being really, really friendly, right? But but there's also kind of this rooted superhero mythology in that. So I grew up watching the Super Friends and reading comic books and stuff like that. So I love that. And actually on my business card, I have a list of superpowers and nemeses.
Nice.
And so
you are
so
perfect for this show.
Read off of that. Yeah. So what I've got listed on my business card is, you know, for superpowers is exquisite creative direction, X-ray vision, and X-ray is kind of in parentheses, sneaker collection, and raising daughters. So so maybe, you know, one of those things, or maybe the superpower is actually having a business card, because I don't know many people that do that nowadays. So maybe that's the thing.
That's true. And I think that our defenders, and myself included, all of us can take some really good cues from you on getting creative on our business cards. Have fun with it, right?
Yeah, I mean, they're
be
boring.
Yourself.
That's the point of them. Like, you know, like a boring business card is the one that I immediately throw away when I'm handed it.
Exactly.
So, you know, so I spent some money and spent some time on the card, and you know, I'm pretty proud of it.
That's awesome. And, you know, as much as we love digital, there's nothing like holding something you design in your hand, right?
Oh, yeah, totally.
It's a neat feeling. Hey, Dan, adversely, what's your design kryptonite?
All right, so what I have listed on the card is absolutes. So I try not to say always or never. That kind of bugs me when other people say that. And also, maybe the biggest pet peeve of mine is people who interrupt. I can't stand that.
Mm. And, you know, always and never are really bad for marriage.
Yes.
Those do not work.
That the hard way.
I've been right and alone many times. Okay, so I love that answer. Dan, this one's really fun. And I caveat this, as I mentioned before, you know, you have a Justice League team of great super friends that help you build these incredible products that you guys do. And so I know you haven't gotten there alone, but you've certainly achieved a great level of success in your work. So I want to ask you, Dan, what would your UX design superhero name be?
Well, so I appreciate you saying Justice League, because most most times when people say that to me, they say the Avengers. Ooh. And I'm a big DC Comics fan, less so a Marvel fan. So I appreciate you saying Justice League. Great. That said, I think, as much as it pains me to say, probably my superhero name, I guess, would be closer to like Vision from the Avengers. Oh. You know, one of the things that I often get called for, organizations usually call me in for, is to like help them paint a picture of their future. And sometimes that picture painting is, it's literal, you know, it's like doing comps or doing something that's very visual to help them kind of visualize what the next stage of their organization or their product would be. Other times that picture painting is kind of like more strategic and abstract, and it's helping, you know, like leadership teams chart courses for the organizations, or you know, design leaders help chart courses for the design team or something like that. So probably something in the range of Vision, I think, is close.
That's great. I love that. And I want to kind of come back to that in one of my last questions I'm going to ask you, because I think it's going to be very relevant to that. Cool. Dan, this one is kind of a tough one, and it's not a real fun question to answer, but I think it's one of the ones that probably our listeners will gets a lot of value out of. Mm-hmm. It's about failure. You know, mm-hmm. None of us like to talk about it, but it does help shape who we are and the journey that we've been on to our success. So I'd like to ask you, Dan, tell us a story about your biggest failure in your career.
Oof. That's a tough question for me to answer, because you know, at the risk of sounding a bit arrogant about this, like, I don't really see the things that I do as failures, you know, because I see them as like learning experiences. And so to me, failure is about, you know, just like the absolute lack of success. And when I'm learning something, I'm like, well, that's at least successful in some way. So it's hard for me to say what are failures and what are successes. Like, that's a hard sort of binary for me. I think, though, that like there are times that I've fallen down, you know, so I'm happy to share some of the stories where I feel like I fell down pretty hard, you know, if that'll be helpful.
Absolutely. No, I appreciate your transparency there. I totally agree with you as well.
I had a client earlier this year, and I thought that client would be really perfect for an apprentice that I had with me at the time. And I run an apprenticeship program. It's a 9-month apprenticeship program for sort of designers and developers. Well, people who want to be designers and developers but have no experience doing that. Hmm. And so one of my design apprentices at the time, I thought this was a perfect project for her. And so I had her basically doing all of the work. And one of the things, you know, and I would oversee the work and we'd critique it together and we'd work on it, but it was largely her project. And one of the things that she wanted to work on was getting better at sort of like presenting and talking to the work and not, you know, not just executing on it. So what we did together was we wrote scripts, you know, we rehearsed it like a play, you know, and we set up conversations on the phone so the client wasn't exactly, watching her read a script or anything like that, but basically trying to set her up for success. And and actually, one of the things that had happened on that project was, after the first presentation, the client called me and he said, "Hey, look, I really like the work. I think it's good. I just think that I'm paying for more than for an apprentice to be on this project." You know, I'm pretty upfront about the apprenticeship and all that stuff. And, you know, and I tried to explain to him that, like, it wasn't just kind of her in isolation doing this work, and that, you know, I was certainly involved in it and all that kind of stuff. But he couldn't see past the fact that she seemed to be leading it. So it seemed to be, you know, kind of her project instead of having my oversight on a lot of that stuff. And what I realized after the fact, and basically he pulled the plug from the project. He said, you know, I don't think that I want to continue this project. I gave him some money back to, you know, because we didn't get as far as I thought the money would cover. So I gave him money back and kind of pulled the plug on the project. And that was devastating for my apprentice, like, because all she could see through that was, I screwed this project up, you know, and that certainly wasn't the case at all. And what I failed to do on that project was, I didn't really protect her well enough on that project. Like, I didn't make the right decisions on that. I think I had the right intentions, but I didn't really make the right decisions. So that was a sort of a painful and traumatic experience for both of us, you know, and so that was one of the things that I think, had I had the chance to do that differently, I probably would have.
Wow, that is a great story, Dan. There's a lot to take away. You know, I have some of my own takeaways that are coming through this, but I'd love to ask you, what do you want our listeners to take away from that story, Dan?
I don't know. Like, I think, yeah, it's still a thing that I'm processing. Like, it probably happened about a year ago now. And it's still a thing that I'm like, well, what would I do differently there? Yeah. And I think one of the things that I'm realizing is what my responsibilities are to people. You know, I'm not responsible for anybody. You know, people are responsible for their own decisions, but I am responsible to the client to make sure that the client is getting what they paid for. I'm responsible to my apprentices to make sure that they have sort of the best experience that they can have. You know, not that they need to be insulated from anything, but that they feel taken care of. So I guess what I take away from that, and hopefully, I guess maybe the listeners can as well, is like what was my responsibility there, and what could I do to do those things better. So for the client, I could have made absolutely clear to him what he was actually getting, you know, and I think I probably shirked on that a little bit, you know, where I didn't make very clear that this is what was going to happen and this is why, and this was my involvement and this was her involvement. And, you know, I could have done a better job at communicating that kind of stuff. And you know, and to my apprentice, I could have done a better job at like sort of shielding her from some of that. And, you know, I thought that I was doing a good job by saying, no, you can do it. You know, you do all of it, you get the experience doing it. But I now realize why it's beneficial to have somebody else speaking to the work sometimes, because sometimes it's so close to you, and sometimes it's hard not to take those kinds of things personally. So I think it's made me think a lot about sort of what my responsibilities are to all the people that are involved in the work.
Wow. You know, I think of a story, something that happened to me and my family personally. My brave wife underwent open fetal surgery to save the life of our unborn son. Whoa. And yeah, it was crazy, crazy story. It's really long, but there's one thing that made me think of this was, you know, the fellow that was going to administer the epidural before the procedure, he was a journeyman. He was kind of, he was just sort of getting on his way. And I felt so strongly against, because my sister had a really horrible experience with an epidural and it almost paralyzed her. And I was very vehemently against him administering that because of that. So it's sort of one of those things where it's like, you know, yes, he's on his way, he's on his journey. And the only way he's going to get better is if he gets that experience, if he is allowed that experience to do that. But for me, and something so kind of life or death, it just wasn't, I had to push back on that. So
yeah,
I mean, think about
that's
that.
Quite literally your baby. I mean,
right.
Like, that's interesting because it sort of makes me think, you know, this project with this client, it was a project that, and it was a site that he had bootstrapped himself, you know, and he was the owner, but he was the only employee. He was the guy that was like, it was his baby, you know, like in the same way. And so in hindsight, that was essentially the same situation that he just described, where he's like, look, I'm happy for that person to get the experience, but not on my baby. Like, I don't want to be the guinea pig for that.
You know? Interesting.
So, I mean, that's an interesting parallel between kind of the story that you shared too.
Yeah, awesome. Dan, one of my favorite lines from Tron was when he said, I fight for the users. How do you fight for your users?
I try to listen to them. I mean, I think like I try to pick clients who really understand their business. And what that often means is that they have really passionate users, you know, and the people that use what they make, or whether it's a reading experience or a product or something like that, they probably have users that really, really know what they want, or at least really are involved in what they're doing. So I just try to listen to those users. I rarely start a project without talking to a handful of people about their experience. Now, those people could work in-house at the client site. They could be users of the product or readers of a magazine or something like that. But I try to just listen to them, because oftentimes they'll tell you what they want. So I kind of feel like it's similar to raising kids, you know? So like my responsibility to my kids is to give them good lives. And sometimes I give them exactly what they ask for. You know, sometimes they want toys, sometimes they want to eat junk food, sometimes they want, you know, sometimes it's my job to give that to them. Other times it's my job to actually not give those things to them. So like when they're asking for junk food for dinner, my job is maybe to give them a balanced meal. When they want to watch TV, maybe my job is to take them to a playground instead. So like I have to try and discern which times are which. So I feel like the same is true for projects. Like when people ask for features and functionality in testing or in interviews or anything like that, you know, sometimes it's a good idea to say like, yeah, that's a good feature. You know, we'll integrate it. Other times it's like, cool, we hear you, but our experience says we should do something else. So I kind of feel like the old quote that gets attributed to Henry Ford about if I'd asked people what they wanted, they would have said faster horses. Like I feel like that kind of comes into play too. So I try to listen to users. I don't always have to do what they say, but I at least try to be able to hear it.
Yeah, a couple of takeaways for me on that, Dan. First of all, the one about listening, I think that's so important, especially when you're trying to solve problems for your clients and you really, truly care about your clients, like I know you do and your team does, because I've seen it in the work you guys are doing. You're doing phenomenal work, and you're really leading the way. So I absolutely appreciate it, and I want all our defenders to go and check out your stuff. I'll be sure to link in the show notes. But speaking of that, I love on the Super Friendly website, the first thing you say on there, I love this. This is such a good kind of positioning statement of the clients you're looking for. It's, if you work for one of the world's most interesting and important organizations and struggle to connect with people through their devices, we can help. Mm-hmm. That's winning right there. I love well, that. It's like, this is like before anything, like this is exactly what we're doing. Like this is who we're looking for to serve. And so it's just a great positioning statement. And the other thing about the kids and kind of, I love that analogy as a father myself, you know, on Halloween, it's the kids, we get so tired of the kids asking for candy all the time that we just give them all their candy. And we say, okay, go ahead and eat it all. You know, and you know, they get a tummy ache. It's like, okay, maybe I shouldn't eat so much candy. So we're kind of different.
I've done the opposite approach, where we'll go out for Halloween and we'll collect candy and the next day we'll just throw it all in the trash. Like, so it's just all gone. Candy's not an option anymore. So maybe I'll try your approach next
year. Give it a shot. See what happens. So, as you know, I do ask for iTunes ratings and reviews at the end of every show, and it does help a great deal. I can't tell you how much, not only for the show's visibility, but also for my heart. It warms my heart and really keeps me fighting on. I want to actually start sharing some of these. I want to share all of these on the show with you and just to kind of show you what people are saying, but also encourage you to put a review in, and I will be sure to share it as well. This one is from Com Junkie, C-O-M-J-N-K-Y, on December 2nd, 2015. Here's what they said. They said, it's a 5-star rating. They said, I love how the host connects with the interviewee, like they are just sitting in a coffee bar, sipping a latte, and chatting about the industry. Very informative and entertaining at the same time. Also, love the superhero theme. 2 thumbs up. Thanks so much, Com Junkie. That means so much to me. Again, I encourage you to leave a rating and review. You can go to userdefenders.com/review or click on the link in the show notes. It'll take you right to it. Really appreciate it. So this is the last question of this segment, and this is kind of coming back around to your superhero name, Vision. Okay. And this is really, I think, appropriate because it's all about the future. And I would love to know, Dan, what does the future of UX look like to you?
I think the future of UX, I feel like it's the same as the past and the present of UX. And I'm sort of taking this question as like, what do I want the future of UX to be as opposed to like, what do I see it being? So tell me if you'd rather have me answer the opposite question.
But No, but I love this, where you're going.
I think good UX has always been and continues to be and will be invisible. You know, I think it's the stuff that you don't imagine that you interact with, right? When I design a website, because I design websites, I'm very conscious when I visit a website that other people have designed and built those. But there are other things in this world that I'm just not aware that people have built. Like if I think about it, I'm like, yeah, of course this was made by a human, but I interact with it so much that I'm like, it's more about the usage of this thing than it is the like being conscious of the fact that it was made. So as an example, my keyboard, you know, my computer keyboard, I'm not conscious of the fact that someone actually spent time figuring out where the letters go and where the buttons go and what typeface the letters are and what color they are and what material this is made out of. It's just a thing that I use to type. So it's that design, that UX, that's invisible to me. And I feel like all good UX, or at least a good portion of that, is invisible. You know, the stuff that I interact with every day, you know, my car, I'm not conscious that someone decided where to put the steering wheel and what shape to make it and what thickness to make the material and all that kind of stuff, that's very invisible to me. And I appreciate that because now I can just concentrate on driving my car. I don't have to worry too much about anything else.
You know, it's a lot of kind of, it's in alignment a lot with what Josh Clark has been talking about too, with kind of those magical experiences, mm-hmm. those things that happen. And I think the best experiences are things that serve our audience, serve our users, and they don't even know what that it's happening. They just know that they're getting their tasks done and it's even delighting them, and they don't even understand why or how, but you know, all that stuff is kind of magical and it's happening in an invisible realm, like you said.
Totally. Josh is great. I'll just take whatever answer he says because that's usually better.
Well, I love what he said. I had the privilege of interviewing him recently, and I love what he said about, you know, storytelling. We were talking about that and how so much of storytelling is woven into the experiences we create for people. And he said something really, really great that I always remember. It's, you know, it's about storytelling. He said, you know, and I think it's not about telling our stories. It's about finding out what their story is and then tucking our technology into that.
Yep, absolutely.
I love that.
Yeah, I love that too.
But I love your answer too, because, you know, UX design, it's always going to be about serving the user, right?
Yeah. Yep, totally.
As you probably already know, Dan Moll's brand new A Book Apart ebook, Pricing Design, is now available. There's a ton of buzz out there about how essential this reading is for anyone working on the web. My amazing friends at A Book Apart are offering an exclusive 15% off coupon code just for Defenders. I'll be sure to post the link and coupon code in the show notes. Now be sure to take advantage of this soon, because this incredible deal expires March 31st of 2016. So this is a brand new segment, Dan, that I'm introducing on your episode.
Okay.
And it's a question from our audience, and it's really, this is somebody that follows you on Twitter. His name is Jesse Gardner. His Twitter handle is @PlasticMind. And his question, yeah, you know, Jesse. So his question for you is this.
Hey, Dan, Jesse here. I know you've had a lot of director level positions over the years, and I was just curious if you can give some tips on how to effectively lead creatives.
Maybe because this is on my mind a lot lately. I don't know that this is the answer, but the answer that I keep coming to very recently is, I think leadership is about service, not about telling people what to do. And I think those are often conflated. You know, when someone gets a job promotion, when they are seen as the leader of their organization or their department, they take that as permission to, like, finally I can tell somebody what to do. And to be fair, I have often looked for promotions at jobs in order to do that. You know, I've quite literally said to my boss, you know, I remember this, I was having an argument with another designer, and we were on the same level. And I said to my boss, can you please promote me so that I can tell her what to do? Like, so that she has to listen to me. And he was like, yeah, I'll definitely do that. You know, like, cause he agreed with me. And I was like, I need to be a leader in order for her to listen to me. And that's, in hindsight, I think that was the wrong approach, because I think I wasn't doing anything for her, right? Like, if I would have served her better, then I think I would have been seen more as the leader, you know? And I think people who are leaders are in that position so that they can serve the people that work with them and for them and under them, or however you want to refer to it. I think they can just do that better. So, like, a really simple example of that is, okay, well, you become a director at your organization, you get a company credit card, right? That's not a sign of power. That means you can now spend money on your team. Right, that's a way to serve them. You can get them the equipment that they want. You can get them the books that they want to read. You can get them the, you know, whatever it is. Like, that is permission for you to serve them better in a way that you couldn't before you were a, you know, quote unquote leader. So I think what has served me well in that is just always trying to look for what I could do for my team and what I could do for my teams to make them better and make their work better. And that's made, you know, sometimes that means, you know, I'm cutting out JPEGs for an art director, you know, like, I don't need to do that. I'm a creative director, you know, like, I've done that job before, but sometimes what one of my art directors needs is for me to cut out JPEGs for them so that they could focus on some bigger picture stuff. So that's what I do. You know, other times it's like, it could be as simple as, like, buying pizza when somebody stays late. You know, it could be as big as, like, flying them home somewhere. You know, one of my favorite leaders and friends is a guy named Will Reynolds, who, he runs an SEO shop in Philly called Sear Interactive. Their retention is ridiculous, because Will do stuff for his employees, like, you know, when when a person's fiance gets deployed to the military, he'll just buy them a plane ticket so that they can go and visit that person on leave. Like without even telling them, like, hey, I bought you a plane ticket. I put you up in a hotel. Like you can go to the base and stay there for a week or, you know, whatever it is. And that's the kind of stuff that he just does for his employees without them asking for it. And so they stay with him because he's a good leader for them. So like, I'm very inspired by stories like that and examples like that. And I try to emulate that.
Oh man. I love this because leadership has a big place in my heart. And I'm kind of one of the angles with this show is it's about UX and design and really reaching folks that are trying to get their career even further. But it's also about leadership, you know, because I think, you know, the best designers are great leaders. Mm-hmm. And as you said, so eloquently, servant leadership is the way to that. It's caring, truly caring about the people around you, the people that you're serving, you know, because there's a big difference between a leader and a boss.
Yes.
And the bosses end up typically as board members on an HOA.
That's right.
And I love this quote. I can't remember who said it, but a good leader leads the people from above them. A great leader leads the people from within them.
Yes. Yes, I love that.
So this has been so awesome, Dan. I want to as we close, I'd love for you to tell our audience the best way to connect and to keep up with you.
Yeah, you can email me directly. I'm dan@superfriend.ly. I'm also on Twitter as @DanielMall. Superfriendly is also on Twitter at @SuperFriendlyCo. So any of those ways are pretty good to get a hold of me.
Sweet. Dan, I want to thank you so much for being here today. It's been an absolute pleasure chatting with you. I've learned a lot, and I've been inspired myself. I know our defenders are going to be absolutely inspired as well. So I just want to say fight on, my friend.
Well, cool. Thanks, Jason. This is a lot of fun.
Hope you enjoyed that interview with the great Dan Mall, a.k.a. Vision. Great superhero name. Really took away a lot on leadership, the work-life balance, which is so challenging, I think, for all of us. I know for all of us. But how he's been able to maintain that and balance that out, it really comes through in his attitude and the amazing people he's been able to partner with and surround himself with, and the great work he's done and continues to do by practicing what he does. That was great, too. So a lot to aspire to and be inspired by. If you're enjoying the show, I'd leap over tall buildings if you take a minute to leave a rating and review on iTunes by visiting userdefenders.com/review. Or if you're on your phone, there's a link in the show notes that will teleport you right to it. Because I know you fight for the users, I encourage you to subscribe to the bi-weekly bugle at userdefenders.com/join to find out who the next super guest is and get my usable thoughts. I want to thank Cesar Limas for the astonishing superhero artwork, Chris Combs for the superhuman editing, and Wyman Gentry for the compelling show music. Thanks again so much for listening, and until next time, fight on, my friends.